I have a front row seat in the lives of three generations of strong black women navigating their way through this slightly pre-apocalyptic world in which we live. We all have cause for concern, every race, creed, color, sex, even alarm as we watch the world turn away from inclusion and turn toward a morally bankrupt and, if I may be frank, a male, white, and rich power consolidation. Brexit was the first major pillar to collapse, an ostensibly financial decision that was really more about xenophobia and jingoism. Then Russia and a big data psychographics firm known as Cambridge Analytica puppeteered our election through a targeted ocean-based marketing strategy that conjured up and exploited the fears in all of us. Soon, if Gallup polls are any indication, France will follow suit with nationalist candidate Marine Le Pen. Normally, my first instinct would be to root for an independent woman taking on the political status quo, but her platform of fear-mongering, anti-establishment, and border hypersecurity that she actually inherited from her father, the party, echoes sentiments of the former two regimes. As much as these developments worry me for my own sake, it's even more troubling for the advancement of women. As Patton Oswalt said of our own election results, what I've learned so far tonight, America is way more sexist than it is racist, and it's pretty effing racist. I'd like to highlight the three women in my life that I was mentioning earlier. My mother, Carlotta Andrews, is a guiding light in my life. As an ordained minister, she leads dozens of parishioners on their spiritual path. After my father died 6 years ago, I sensed that she not only mourned for him as a husband and a partner for life, but also as a deacon and a first man of the church. She recently was involved in a kind of whirlwind four-month or so romance and was engaged to wed a fellow minister of an AME church in Baltimore. In fact, I would have been there this weekend since the wedding was supposed to have been yesterday. But they called it off primarily because his church suffers from hemorrhaging membership and debt. It's a very bad situation. He wanted her to sell her home, leave her calling, move to D.C., and be a silent partner in that church because AME does not allow women of the cloth. And to not have any input either in their rising cost of the church and the parsonage on which they would work and live. The real death knell of the courtship was that he led my mom on to believe that he shepherded a church of thousands. That's how he would always refer to it. In January, she took a visit and found out that there were less than 10 parishioners. So, yeah, it was very bizarre. He led her on to believe that, you know, it was a higher calling that leaving her church of 60 or so people would mean greater rewards. But yeah, that was never really the case. He just wanted an assistant. I could rattle on about hypocrisy and double standard, but my main point is in our social environment, I don't think Mom would have felt so compelled to find another husband in a society where she's subtly undermined or questioned for being an unmarried woman in charge. Now, my wife, Sierra Conari Andrews, battles sexism in her profession as well. As an outgoing black female and foreign accountant, she has to prove her worth and her ability in a world where introverted American white males are the norm. She definitely got her more outgoing nature and thirst for knowledge from her parents in Mali, where she's from, at a time where many girls did not finish primary education. Her mother, Fatoumata, blazed the trail for all of her children's success as a college-educated woman, an assistant now to the Minister of Education in Mali. She's actually really transformed the demographics of primary education among girls there. Her father, Sheikh, was a successful hotelier. He instilled in his daughters that they can do anything that men can do, and actually vice versa as well. He loved to dote on his daughters especially, and at a time when it was a little strange, he definitely enjoyed making the girls breakfast and ironing their clothes and just preparing them to conquer the world. That was always very inspiring for me to know him. He passed away as well. Anytime my wife Sierra would bring home a B in class, he would always tell her that she can't allow herself to be beaten by the neighborhood boys, and she ended up getting her baccalaureate at the top of her class because of that. Now, my daughter, Layla, is also getting ready for school, and she has the good fortune here of being raised in an environment that women of color are encouraged and even expected to accomplish everything that a man can do. She's very empathetic and sweet by nature, and she's expressive in her words and actions, and she's also, unfortunately, susceptible to infectious optimism or crushing sadness. It's kind of the blessing and the curse of my own mother. Lots of people in my family tell us she definitely resembles mom in spirit, that altruism. My purpose in life, I feel, is to protect her potential. My dad had a saying, guard the heart, and I think that's what he used for my mom as well. Now, to get back to me for just a second before I wrap up, I often find myself wondering about my place in this new American world as an educated, free-thinking black man. Am I more the target, the other, than ever? Will the persecution of people who look, sound, think, act like me become the new detail of history that Holocaust deniers espouse? Then I have a realization. My line of thinking that way is the same of oppressors, of self-interest superseding all else. So the only strategy I can think of to combat this and save us from the endless cycle of CYA is a spirit of generosity. Our instinct, as you use, to care for others' needs above our wants is not only our calling, it's our weapon and our counterbalance. I intend to start this strategy by standing up for the rights of people closest to my heart who helped define me as a man, as a son, a husband, and as a father.